Our first feature this week takes us to Blickling Hall, where there is currently a special exhibition. Lynn Bensley went to visit the hall, and Sam Standley will read her findings.
Like the ghost of Anne Boleyn, most who visit Blickling Hall usually desire to return again and again. Blickling is one of the National Trust's finest Jacobean mansions, which also houses the Trust's largest library of 12,500 books that line the shelves of the library beneath the palatial plasterwork of the long gallery ceiling. Well, there was never a better setting for a more prized collection. By far the largest and the most significant within the National Trust, it was Sir Richard Ellis, 1682 to 1742, of Nocton, that high-minded scholar and bibliophile who amassed the bulk of this collection. Now, upon his death, the collection passed into the Hobart family and was further enlarged by the Lady Caroline Suffield, 1767 to 1850 collection, and then the Lady Constance Talbot, 1836 to 1901 collection, and then that of Sir Philip Kerr, 1882 to 1940, the 11th Marquess of Lothian. As its last private owner, it was Lord Lothian who bequeathed the hall and its contents to the Trust in 1940. Well, it was a very hot day at the end of June when I visited Blickling to meet property librarian Rebecca Feeks, who explained the parts that the book collection is playing in the current Journeys exhibition, which features textiles from the Karen Thacker collection. In keeping with the textiles exhibition, we had also planned an exhibition that highlights Blickling's global connections, looking at people associated with Blickling and the countries they have visited and the items they have brought back to the house. We identified Italy, India, France, Japan and Russia as our featured countries, and at the heart of it is our wonderful, wonderful library. 7 magnificent specimens from the collection are currently on display around the house. These include Recollections of India, 1847, by Charles Stuart Hardinge, 1822 to 1894. Now, Charles went to India as the private secretary of his father, Field Marshal Henry Hardinge, during the time of the First Anglo-Sikh War. These are actually lithotints done by James Duffield Hardinge, 1798 to 1863, says Rebecca, using an innovative technique where he has employed a stone rather than a lithograph pen to achieve these lovely washes that look like watercolour. And though this was a time of unrest and great change in India, there are no scenes of conflict here. These images are very tranquil and very serene. It is very much a British gaze, a colonial ideal representing ownership and power. Now Henry, much impressed by his son's efforts, sent several prints home to the delight of Queen Victoria, who recommended publication. And also on display is 36 views of Mount Fuji, 1852 to 1858, by Hiroshige, 1797 to 1858, one of the last prominent Japanese ukiyo-e artists. It is an exquisite collection, depicting images of Mount Fuji, viewed from various locations and in different seasons. He is a master of the gradation of colour that gives a superb soft tone to the images. He is quite different from others in that his focus is on daily life and the weather and the changing seasons. Mount Fuji is never the dominant feature. It is always in the background of these peaceful-looking pictures as he travelled around the provinces. Now, one of the most striking exhibits features the 2 studio notebooks known as Iconis Ipsis Plantis, around 1600, by Fablo Colonna, 1567 to 1640, and he was a leading Italian botanist who made detailed studies of hundreds of plants and their medicinal uses. A scrupulous observer, Colonna also pioneered early nature printing by pressing inked leaves from each specimen onto paper and then finishing the stem and the leaves with pen and paint. This method achieved accurate representations of each plant, and such accuracy as one's observations was a product of the scientific age. Now, it may be a point of conjecture among book lovers, but my favourite exhibit is the Grand Atlas of 1663 by the renowned Dutch mapmaker and printer Joan Blow, 1596 to 1673. Now, this is the French version that came in 12 volumes with over 600 double-mounted colour plates, explained Rebecca. There are volumes dedicated to the Americas, to Asia, to Germany, etc., and taking in all the known world at the time. Now, there was great rivalry among the map makers of the 16 and 1700s, and the best were coming from the Netherlands. This was due to the combination of their maritime success, both in trade and naval power, and because they were adept at embracing new scientific discoveries and techniques. And in order to trade with the East, well, you needed maps to get you there and back. Each meticulously hand-coloured map is remarkably accurate for the period, and they are undoubtedly the finest examples of the golden age of cartography. Besides the 7 books currently on display, visitors are being offered the chance to attend a specialist book tour once a month, when they will be able to view a further 12 volumes from the collection. The book tour is conducted in the Long Gallery, says Rebecca, and is a real opportunity for people to get up close and personal with these books. And although they won't be able to touch them, they will be able to take pictures and view various illustrations. We have some big, bold and beautiful books that are a real feast for the eyes, and being able to share them with the public is very important to me. And admitting it was impossible to choose a favourite from such a diverse collection, Rebecca gave a much more instructive reply. I don't have a favourite book, but I have favourite elements of books. I love 16th century woodcuts, woodcut title pages and woodcut initials, and some of the early bindings, known as all-over bindings, where the entire cover is decorated with tooled designs. These are typically done in blind, which means a heated tool is pressed into the cover material without the use of gold. The current Journeys exhibition is another chapter in the history of Blickling Hall, which also serves to underline the significance of books as the building blocks of civilizations raised upon the foundation stones of enlightened minds. Now, Anne Boleyn loved books, which may explain why her ghost returns to Blickling every year to wander the Long Gallery and indulge in her passion for the written word. It really is a never-ending story.